Hello and welcome to the 16th and very different episode of the Whistleblowers. I'm Luke Decock, News and Observer sports columnist. With me as always, John Clockerty, the former head of ACC basketball officiating and a Hall of Fame official himself. But we've got some special guests today. It's a bit of a family reunion. Tim Clockerty, Big East, ACC. What am I missing?
A-10.
Basketball official is here. And Connor Clockerty, who's an ACC football official, field judge.
Correct.
All right. So what we've done here is we've basically gotten two generations of Clockertys in two different sports. And we're just going to kind of talk a little bit about growing up as an official's kid and becoming one and how that all led. So, John, if you want to start things off, I'm just curious, did you want your kids to go into officiating?
I never pushed them. They would come to games with me and different sites. Tim and Patrick, my two oldest, would hang around with me when we would go to different. And of course, they shared in some of the tournaments. And then Connor came later, and he did the same thing, went to Final Fours. But I think they were exposed to officiating at an early age. And actually, Tim, my oldest, who's here, he did a lot of baseball before he went into basketball, and they were both athletes, so I wasn't surprised, but I never really pushed them and says, you need to do this or follow my footsteps, but I'm glad they did, and it's exciting because now that I'm out of it, Luke, I watched Tim's games, and I look forward to watching Connor's games, and certainly discuss it afterwards and share experiences, but it's been fun having both of these guys involved in officiating.
Tim, you're the one who followed most directly in your father's footsteps going into basketball. Was that intentional?
No. I went into baseball when I came out of college. I went to Elon and initially went into baseball, but it's truly two different generations because Pat and I grew up going to places like Garner Webb and Mars Hill with Dad when we were little, sitting in the gym waiting for him to be done and then riding home with him, whereas Connor grew up going to Final Fours with Dad and Mom. But I wasn't exposed to the high level. I was in high school and college and could really care less what he was doing when he traveled. We were more worried about, having fun and, going to the beach on spring break instead of the Final Four when I was growing up. But when I got into baseball, a lot of the some of the major league umpires and some of the high level minor league umpires all knew who my father was, and they wanted to know what I was doing in baseball instead of basketball. But it was something for me to do in the off season of baseball, and then it went from there. And then when I got out of baseball, it just continued. And to be honest, it's I think basketball is a much better game to officiate than baseball was for me, just as far as, the sport itself. So I've enjoyed getting into basketball instead of baseball, but initially it was baseball.
And Connor, you went the football route.
That's right. So when I graduated from NC State, I had an immediate need to be a part of the action again. As when I graduated, I was not doing anything. I felt like productive wise, and so I was sitting in the office with Tim actually, and it was in the summer, and he said, man, you need to start getting better at something. And so it was the start of football season. I had always had a love for football. I was never big, fast, or strong enough to be very good at it, but I liked it a whole lot more than basketball or baseball. And so I started doing the Pop Warner games in and around Wake County, and just fell in love with it. I loved being part of the action, being part of the game, and having a helping facilitate the game. So that's why I got started.
And when did you get hired by the ACC?
3 years ago. So this will be my 2018 will be my fourth season. Doug Rhodes put me on the supplemental staff back in 2011, I believe. So I was on the supplemental staff, which means you work Big South games for four or five years. And then Doug hired me. And He actually hired me and then retired the next year, and Dennis Hennigan came on. But this will be my fourth season coming up now.
So, well, you know, you mentioned going to Gardner-Webb and Connor, you got to go to Final Fours. What was it like growing up the son of an official? Not as many games were on TV at that time as there are now, but it was still, I mean, your dad was working Final Fours eventually, was involved in some very high-profile games in the 80s.
The social media at that time was not what it is today. So when he had the Seton Hall, Michigan game or the other games, you knew there was controversy involved, but you didn't know on the level that it would be exposed today. The biggest memories I have of any of those 11 Final Four
12,
runs, Dad?
12.
12 was the swag and the T-shirts we would get when Mom and Dad would come home. That was really the extent of our level of it. You know, we knew that he was working them, and we knew that those were high-level games, but we didn't, you know, it was not, you know, we didn't feel special or anything to that effect, but we knew we got a lot of T-shirts and a sweatshirt when they would come home from those assignments. You know, looking back on it, to do what he did, now that I'm involved in it, it's pretty miraculous. It's just crazy to think about what him and Jim Burr and Tim Higgins and the guys that worked 11 or 12 Final Fours during the course of their year, their career, to be able to do something like that. And I just know how hard it is to make it to the Sweet 16 or Final Eight. It's pretty special. And, you know, I don't think if I ever get that assignment or get that call, not think that it's, you know, something special.
Look, the boys never, it was never a situation where any of the boys made such a big deal out of my Final Fours. If they said, Dad, are you going this year? And I would say, yeah, well, that would be good. But it wasn't like they were wearing it on their chest or anything. And Connor went probably to, my young Connor, he probably went to more Final Fours than the older ones put together, because it was just his age.
Sure.
When they were in high school, I guess I was going to Final Four.
I went to one. I went to Indianapolis.
Indianapolis.
Connor, yeah. How many Final Fours did
I
you
went
go
to? Three. I went to New York. I went to Minneapolis. Maybe New Orleans. No, I get some.
And I don't think Pat went to any of them.
Yeah, probably. But
we were more worried about where we were going for high school spring break than where he was going for the Final Four.
I can remember when they would go to the Final Four. So I'm 12 and 13 years younger than Tim and Pat. And they would be babysitting me, but there would be high school parties at the house when Mom and Dad would be at the Final Four. So
now
I can remember Tim would have to come up. I'd say, Tim, I can't.
I'd read Connor a book.
He'd have to come up and read a book or put me down
because
they were making too much noise downstairs.
Yeah. But they've shared in my career, and now I'm sharing my time in Luke in their careers. I just get thrilled when I get to see them work big games, and you know, Tim's worked, certainly he's worked a couple championships in the Big East, and Connor's had really, really good schedule the last couple years, and I spend my afternoons and evenings watching them, and it's worked out marvelous. It's been terrific for me. As soon as I stepped on as supervisor, I had these guys to watch.
Yeah, I had a different perspective on it than Tim. So by the time I knew kind of what was going on, every game wasn't televised, but every game he worked seemed to be televised. That was at the prime of his career. So whether he was at Kentucky or Arkansas or Duke or North Carolina or Syracuse or Georgetown, it was on TV. And so I thought that was extremely cool. And that's the first, I'm not sure fans realize how competitive we are in our industry.
Yeah.
And that's what you want, is to work the big games. And so whether or not I knew it at the time, that probably ingrained something in me to want to do this. And that's all, we care about. Everybody wants to know who's got what games, how's your schedule turn out. And it was really cool to watch him work those big games and to get to go to a couple of them. He took me to the Arkansas-Kentucky game when they were both in the top five for one of my birthdays. And, you know, that's probably why I'm doing this now.
Sure. I didn't know any. I mean, I remember the first time I met you, we were at RDU, and Chip Alexander was flying somewhere, and I was flying somewhere for hockey. You know, he introduced me. I was like, well, I don't know. I've never heard of him. He can't be that big of a referee. Besides, what's he doing living in Raleigh? Such a big-time referee. Yeah. I mean, I've never heard of him. And then, obviously, I was wrong.
Well, yeah, it just, Luke, it just mushroomed. And the basketball committee obviously thought I was a guy that they could trust with the Final Fours. And, you know, they sent me back 12 times in 16 years. So they had confidence in me, and it led probably to the next step was the supervisor's job. I may have gotten that job without having the resume that I had, but Commissioner Swofford knew of me and knew a little bit about me, and I think he probably reached out to a couple coaches and tried to get a feel there. So. My career led to a supervisor's career.
How'd your mom deal with it?
Well,
Dad being gone all the time.
I'll let these guys jump in there.
I wasn't even asking.
Yeah.
Mom's.
You don't know.
Well, this is Mom's boy right here. But they came up with when Dad's schedule got to the point where he was gone 5-6 days a week. Connor was the one at the house. Pat and I were away at school, and they would do dinner every night together, do things all the time together. So they were very, you know, close, but we would always joke Connor about, you know, that part of the relationship. But I remember getting phone calls when Pat would be in trouble or Connor would be in trouble, and being the oldest, I would get a phone call from Dad saying, you know, I'm on the road for 14 days, and I don't need these phone calls from your mom. And the message was clear. But Mom was Mom's an official's wife. I mean, she loves watching our games. She loves watching Dad's games. And she's probably the perfect model for how an official's wife handles everything. She doesn't let any of it bother her.
You know, Luke, when Patrick was playing at State, and Connor also, she would go and bundle up in blankets and keep a scorebook, and she didn't want to miss any of his games, and she would travel to Florida State or Clemson, and she was just very, very, very involved. More, you know, it was something she loved to do, and she took care. When I got into the Hall of Fame, the first thing I recognized was what she did for the kids and did for me, and set herself aside and took care of my three boys when I was on the road, and certainly took care of me through all that whole career. So she was a model for us in the way she handled it. And again, Connor was the youngster that came 12 years later, and she had a special relationship with him because these two were in college and gone. Connor was there, and he was home with her all the time.
Yeah, I'm absolutely the mama boy, so there's no doubt about that. But if it did bother her, I know that I never noticed it when I was young, or now that I'm older and would realize what was happening. She never let it affect her at all. She ran the show. She's absolutely the boss of the family, and I can actually remember it would be getting to be mid fall. And Dad would be driving her crazy, and I can remember her saying, "When does basketball start?" So it might have helped their marriage, you know, him getting out of the house for 4 months. But no, she was the glue that held everything together for sure.
Tim, did you learn anything from your parents about, like, now you have a very busy travel schedule now, mm-hmm. doing what you do, about how to handle that and things at home and your kids?
You have to marry well. I'm very fortunate. With who I married, that she is fully supportive of me going on the road for 4 months out of the year. Not once does she ever complain. She's left at home with three kids and any age from freshman in college to middle school. So there's a lot of issues that go on at the house, and a lot of times I don't even know about them until I'm home, you know, 3 days later, because she doesn't want to bother me, whether I'm on the road dealing with it or just doesn't want to interrupt my travel schedule. But the travel is probably the worst part of what we do. And the travel affects everybody, from whether I'm having, all of a sudden I get a call at 4:30 in the morning that my 6 a.m. flight has been canceled, and now I'm scrambling around the house, and I was supposed to take the kids to school to help my wife, and I'm like, Laura, I'm just not going to be able to do it today. I got to figure out how to get to Omaha, Nebraska. And I'm on the phone with my boss, and they just deal with it and don't even say a word and just move on. And it's, I know plenty of guys that aren't married to women like that.
I was hoping you'd say that.
And I hear stories in the locker room from them, and I'm just very thankful for that I'm married to, with Laura, that, you know, she just is very helpful during the course of the season.
Do your kids understand what you do?
Oh, yeah, very much so.
She's three.
Yeah, so she no idea. Yes, does she ever see Daddy on TV?
Mm-hmm. She sees me on TV. Well, she thinks every football officials are not quite as recognizable as basketball officials, so she thinks any football game she sees, I'm on there. But she's getting to the age now where she could tell. And her and Maggie came up to the game at Virginia. The only thing she cared about was the Cavalier on the horse. That's all she cared about. I cannot work NC State games, but when I go work at Chapel Hill or Duke, she'll come to those games as well. So she likes the extracurricular. She likes the bands. She likes the mascots. She likes the horses. So, and football's vastly different as far as travel.
Sure, and time commitment.
Yes, we leave on Friday, and I'm home first thing Sunday morning, if not Saturday night, if I have a noon game. So it's,
one game a week.
One game a week. Mm-hmm. But not that it's, I mean, the weekends. My wife Maggie is still home, and she'll be home with two kids this upcoming season. So it's still hard on them as well. But
you've got conference calls or things with your crew, yes. and then there is time commitment.
We don't go to sleep at the same time every night. I'm up after I get done with my normal 9-to-5 job. We have game film review on Sunday and Monday. We'll get our grades by Tuesday. Our supervisor will have our weekly training films. We'll have six different films we'll have to review. It's about an hour and a half worth. We have tests we have to take on a weekly basis. And then by Wednesday or Thursday, it's preparation for the upcoming Saturday game. So it's film review of the two teams that we are officiating and whatever my referee wants to do to prepare, whether that's a little quiz or, you know, whatever it is, based on the teams that we're officiating. So, it's a week-long process. It's not just show up on Saturday and officiate. It affects the whole week.
So, all right, so Tim, your kids are older.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a period of time where they kind of came to understand what you do? Do you ever get notes from them on calls or?
I get texts. They watch the games, and the more important games, the higher profile games, they'll stay up and watch them, even on school nights, and they look at social media, so they've read things that aren't real supportive of me, that fans and stuff write on Twitter, and I tell them to just stay off of that stuff, but they're of that age where they can just find it.
Yeah.
And but they love they've been to New York, they've been to, you know, whatever. If there's a Disney tournament that I work during the Thanksgiving, they'll go. They've been to New York for the NIT a couple times with us, and they think it's special, but I think it was just like us growing up. It's just, you know, something that Dad does.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make them, I mean, they see all my flaws anyhow at the house, so they don't think I'm anything better than anybody else just because I referee games at a Division I level. But they... My oldest daughter, she'll get on Twitter, and I think I told you this earlier, but I told her, Grace, you can't pay any attention to what those fans write on there. I said, if you're going to Google my name on Twitter, I said, you're going to see certain things after games. I said, when you make a call, half the people are happy and half of them are upset. So I said, that's where they vent is now on social media. I said, so don't take any of it personal. And for the most part, they don't.
Can you imagine if social media had been around for some of the games?
I tell you what, I had enough just with the limited amount of sports writers taking me to the cleaners. So I can't imagine with some of the stuff that I went through. But, you know, Luke, really, I don't, what, it's given me so much fun and enjoyment to have them involved in officiating. That Connor will tell you, he doesn't get out of the locker room before he has a text message from me asking him about this play or that play. Tim doesn't get out of the locker room. And almost any game that I see and give him a thumbs up or what about this? And he'll know. Tim will say, I'll say, Tim, there's two plays. And he will know the two plays, Luke, before I ever bring them up. And Connor also. And, of course, he may only have three plays or two, and I'll ask him about them. But I think neither one of them have ever said, Dad, I don't need your text messages. I don't need – but they've always been receptive, and I enjoy I don't critique all their games, but I'll talk to them about the – you know, how it went and so forth.
They may say it to each other, just not to you.
No. And to be honest, a lot of the partners that I work with either worked with Dad, well, many of them did work with Dad or worked for Dad. And the first thing they'll ask at halftime, if we've had a couple tough plays, they said, do you think your dad's watching? I'll say, well, hold on a second. And I'll say, he liked the goaltend, but did not like the walk that we had at the five-minute mark. And so they know that Dad's watching, so I would never discourage the text that he sends me. You know, we get the same text or the phone calls from our current supervisors, and it's just part of the job. We want immediate feedback. A lot of times when you make calls on the floor or on the field, we can't go look at the replay like the rest of the country. So we're not 100% sure whether we got that goal 10 right, or we let a play pass, thought it was a good block shot, and you know everybody's yelling and screaming for a foul. We think we got it right, but until you get affirmation from somebody watching the game, you're not 100% sure.
Connor?
Yeah, actually, my dad was not. He's not a football guy, and he doesn't know all the rules and stuff. But what a lot of officiating is managing situations and managing people. And that's no different whether it's hockey or baseball or basketball or football. And the crew I work on is Jeff Heiser's crew. He's one of the top officials in the country. He worked the Rose Bowl this past year. And you wouldn't believe we will get in, just like Tim said, we will get in the van. We'll be getting escorted out of the stadium. We will all, of course, you check your phone, and he'll always say, what did your dad say? And He's not asking if my dad was checking on his penalty enforcements. He was asking about the management of the game.
Sure.
How did we manage the situations that came up? And they've actually, when Jeff got the Rose Bowl assignment, I know my dad reached out to him to congratulate him, and they had a conversation. And it's not about, at least on my end, it's not about the calls that were made, I should say, or the penalty enforcements, but like how did the game go? It was managed well. You know, you guys did a really good job, and I always want this feedback. I do have one funny story. My first year in the league, I had a Thursday night game. I won't get into exactly what game it was, but it wasn't my finest performance, and a coach was just in my grill. And on Thursday night, when you're on ESPN, it is. Everybody's watching, and so we get in the van. I'm drained, and of course, my referee looks at me and says, "What did your dad say?" And I said, "All he texted was son, comma, I love you." And I said, I looked at him. I said, it was actually Riley Johnson. I said, "Riley, this isn't good." And he said, "Yeah, probably not gonna be good." All the big brass were in the building for the Thursday night game, and I said, when he tells you he loves you, it means that.
It's not good.
It's not good.
We've mentioned Pat a couple times, and he's not here, so let's talk about him. How did he slip through the net? Because he's not in the – I mean, obviously he was a great baseball player at NC State, for people who don't know that, but he's the only one of you guys not to get into officiating in some way. And obviously he's not here to speak for himself, but you know, what's the answer as far as you guys are concerned?
He's not good looking enough to be an official.
I tell people all the time, Pat's the best athlete of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And my theory on it is Pat was cheered for his whole life. I mean, he was really a good high school football, baseball player, really good baseball player at NC State. I don't think Pat ever, I would go to Dad's games and the animosity or the booing never fazed me one bit when I would hear it go down towards Dad. Maybe that affected Pat, and mm-hmm. Pat just said, I don't want to go out there and have to deal with that. Plus, from all of Pat's playing, I don't think Pat, his knees, I don't think would hold mm-hmm. up during the course of a game.
He's got
knee issues and back issues just because of how physical of a linebacker and all his years of catching.
Yeah.
But I just don't think Pat, it ever fell into Pat's thing to say, you know, I think going out there and getting screamed and yelled at for 2 hours would be something I'd enjoy.
Look, I think it's a legit question. Patrick just never showed any interest, and there's something there that probably kept him away, whether it was the fact that he didn't want to go out there and take the criticism that goes along with officiating, whether it's football, basketball, baseball. It was just not in his structure. Connor may have a different theory on it, but I think it's a legitimate question. But Pat, if he was here, he'd probably just shrug his shoulders and say, you know, it was not something I was interested in.
Yeah, yeah. He also immediately went into a high. He got into coaching he was a graduate assistant at NC State for a year or two, and then he immediately went into a sales position, which is, I keep going back to the competition aspect of it, but he was tied up with, I mean, he's always been the top of the list in sales, whatever company he's working for. So he immediately went into a field that he was devoting all of his time to. So he probably never even thought about it, to be honest with you.
And to Pat's benefit, I mean, to Pat's, every time we all get together, if it's during a season, we're either talking about football refereeing or basketball refereeing. And so he's kind of out there, but, you know, he usually brings up golf or something that he always beats us in. So, but, you know, he's on, well, Connor disagrees.
That's not true, for the record.
But,
beat some of you in.
But beat some of us in. But he, you know, I think he somewhat lives through, you know, our officiating, but he never really did have an interest. I remember we would referee Jeffrey's YMCA games together, and he didn't like the moms yelling when Pat and I would do that. And that was just to make money in junior high and high school. But I never even thought, twice about it. But maybe he just didn't like that whole aspect of being on the other side of the ball.
You mentioned his day job. What do you guys do that allow you to commit this kind of time to officiating? And John, after they're done, you know, was it different for you? Was the time commitment different, or did you need that kind of flexibility? Or you can go first.
I'll be a bit brief. After teaching at Wake Forest, that's where I got started. I had flexibility because of my schedule at Wake Forest, so I was doing NAIA District 26 in high school, and then I went to work for Wachovia, and that became an issue, leaving early, coming in late, you know, and stuff like that. So that only lasted a while. So I had to go to work for Payne Weber, or one of those operations, A.G. Edwards, where I had my accounts, and I serviced my accounts, but my time was flexible. And I wasn't working where a Wachovia needed you in there at 9 to 5. So I figured out early on I wasn't going to give up basketball, so I had to find a place where I can manage my time, and then that worked out for me, and my career grew. But so many good referees, Luke, I believe, can't pursue to the highest level because their jobs are just far too demanding to allow them to have 100% flexibility that they need. I think both of these guys have that flexibility, so their careers are taken off because they haven't. If they didn't, they'd be hamstrung.
So what is it you guys do that have a lot of you
well,
do this?
Well, I'm self-employed as far as we have a family business where we sell the uniforms that all the officials wear, and we have the state contract for the North Carolina High School Athletic Association. So I support them with their uniforms, and then I have another business called Sports Image where we help raise funds for the athletic departments for high schools at the high school level. Another referee and myself do that. And but you really, to juggle two careers with basketball, it's almost, you have to either do one or the other if you're a basketball official. You can't work for a corporation 9 to 5, 5 days a week, and be a college high-level basketball official. There's just no way to do both of them. So a lot of guys either retire early and pursue it or find some type of career that allows them to get away 3 or 4 days a week during the winter to be able to go do that. But there's guys every year that Tim Nestor this year has decided to, he's a executive with RJR, and this was his last season because he's been offered a promotion with RJR, and it was just too good to pass up.
Yeah.
I know he hates to get out of basketball officiating, but you either have to choose one or the other. You can't do both at that level.
Yeah, and Connor, for football, you need a job where you can basically get your Fridays free most of the time, sometimes Wednesdays and Thursdays.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was there are not as much as with basketball, but there are guys that cannot pursue the higher levels because they can't handle the travel, can't get away from work. But so I worked with Tim for 12 years after I graduated from NC State. And just in 2016, or maybe 2015, I decided to pursue another venture, and I got into the finance industry. And it was a prerequisite that any firm I went to go work with was going to have to be okay with my travel. And, you know, I wasn't surprised, but all of them were fine with it. You know, there was none of them said, at least the you know, four or five that I talked to, they all looked at it as a positive. One is because I just told them it would be 12 or 13 Fridays in the fall that I'd be leaving. I can kind of work around the schedule. I might have to leave on a Wednesday for a Thursday game. But they were fine with that. And in our industry,
when they don't work on Friday anyway.
You know what? It's kind of up to me anyway. They're not overly concerned. You know, it's my business technically that I'm building. So, you know, that's how we work. And so, if I get everything done by Thursday, I'm fine to leave on Friday.
So we've talked a lot about you guys growing up with an official now, and obviously officiating kind of turned into the family business in a lot of ways. But what do you guys have particular favorite stories or anecdotes about watching your dad or you know, like texts you've gotten? I mean, I think we probably covered the best one you've gotten, Connor, but anything like that?
You want me to go? Yeah. I would say the first time I went to referee at Seton Hall, Dad has a Final Four game with them against Michigan, and PJ Carlissimo is the coach. And you still see it on SportsCenter, you still hear commentators mention that play that he had, but I just always remember going into Seton Hall and how nice everybody was. Now, the fans weren't, but they were, and then one night they're celebrating the 20th anniversary of the Final Four team, and PJ is there. And I hear there's a knock on our locker room after the game, and all he wants to know is he heard that John Clogarty's son was refereeing the game, and he wants to come in and meet me. And all he could talk about was my dad, and he wanted to know how he was doing, how it's, you know, what's he up to now, this and that. And I just always remember him. What a good guy, you know. If the fans could see that aspect of what we do, there would be less of the hatred towards, you know, what we do. PJ was probably over that play as soon as the game was over. I think his quote was, if he had one official to make that call, it would have been John Clogarty. So just, you know, stories like that. I still go into arenas and the majority of the people want to know, you know, how my father is. And you know, is he completely retired? Or is he? I said, no, he watches probably as many games now as he did when he was refereeing. But, you know, he's retired from, you know, working for a conference. But that's just some of the stories that I kick around.
But the Seton Hall fans knew who you were.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't take long before they – I mean, there's not too many Clogartys in the officiating world. And that's not the only place. Vanderbilt, I had to walk out at Vanderbilt for the first time, and I was with a guy named Andre Patillo, who was a legendary SEC ref, and another guy. And I walk out, and Vanderbilt's an elevated stage floor. And I walk out, and the place is just booing, and I don't realize what's – and Andre's holding my partner back, and they said – they're laughing because they made me walk out by myself, and they see me, and they're all booing and yelling, and – it's all because of what he did preceding me, but not. I had only refereed there once or twice. It wasn't what I had done. But as the saying goes, if they're not booing, then you're not doing the job correctly, I guess. So
it's like your writing. If somebody doesn't like your commentary, you know what? Then if everything was kosher, you probably...
I wouldn't. If everyone liked everything I wrote, I probably wouldn't have a job.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and you know, we talked about this a little earlier that, you know, and John and I have talked about this on the podcast before. I think that sports writers, especially sports columnists and officials, have some similarities in their roles in terms of we do what we do very publicly. Any mistakes we make are immediately seized upon. They're very public and everyone thinks that they can do our job better than we can. And there's some similarities there in terms of the exposure and the willingness to put yourself out there, the willingness to make a call, the willingness to write a column. You know, it's not for everybody. But there are some similarities there. Connor, anything for you?
No, the only you know, the biggest games I can remember were the Duke UNLV game that he worked in. I was too young for the Georgetown Villanova game, and obviously the Vanderbilt stuff. I've never gone to Vanderbilt, but I know that that's a funny story. I know Tim was going there as a baseball umpire when he worked in the SEC, and they were all over him as an umpire because of the name Clogarty. So Vanderbilt clearly has not forgotten the technical that he gave the fans, whenever that was.
But, well, do you remember when that was, John?
I'm sorry?
Do you remember when that was?
Oh, yeah.
What? Roughly. Yeah, what year was it roughly?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what year, but it all involved Florida and Vanderbilt, and there was a kid named Shinsis playing for Florida, and he got in trouble, and they start throwing tennis balls, and I went, you know, and it proceeded to be an issue. Every gym that Florida went, they were throwing tennis balls at Shinsis, and the next thing you know, the conference puts out a memorandum that there were unsportsmanlike issues, tennis balls, da da da, whatever they. But they read it before the game when Florida showed up at Vanderbilt. So they threw some tennis balls. So I went to the game management and I said, "You need to make an announcement that if there's continued throwing tennis balls, there's going to be a technical foul." Well, they thought the game was over because Vanderbilt had the ball out of bounds, so they thought they were safe, and they threw a couple tennis balls. So I called a technical foul, took the ball out of their hands, let Florida shoot free throws that sent the game into overtime, and Florida beat Vanderbilt, and
that won
was for the conference championship. Huh. You know, but so I did not get a whole lot of support from the league office.
Someday Tim's kids will go there and get food.
Oh yeah, and grandkids too. But Kyle, there's no stories or anything. Yeah.
No, I mean not.
No, not yet.
Not yet. That's right.
Not yet.
All right. General question. What is? And John, you can jump in here too. I don't know if we talked about this or not. What's? Oh, yeah, we absolutely have. For you two, Connor and Tim, what's the favorite or most memorable game that you've been a part of?
Most memorable game I've been a part of, probably the biggest game I've worked was probably I opened up last year at Clemson at Auburn. Jordan-Hare Stadium was rocking. It's probably the loudest stadium, that or I also had the Clemson at South Carolina this past year. One of those two stadiums was probably the loudest I've worked. I haven't been to Florida State or Clemson for a big game yet, so they would probably be the two loudest in the league. But I just haven't had a big game in those stadiums yet. So, and then obviously I also worked at Notre Dame to open up the season. And that was that's the most special place I've worked.
Yeah.
It's different.
It just oozes.
It's just different, right? It's different. I cannot believe you didn't come to that game, by the way. If I'm lucky enough to go back up there, you need to go.
My next bucket list is Army Navy. Yeah, so that's, you tell Dennis that I want
you tell Dennis. Luke will send him the link to this. But I do need to say this: the number one place we work, Army, the United States Military Academy, is an independent in Division I football, and we are contracted to work their games, and that is hands down the most special environment that we work in. I love going to West Point, and I do the tour of the campus every time I go there and learning about the history of Robert E. Lee and Ulysses S. Grant, and it is just unbelievable, the atmosphere when you go up there.
Tim?
I have four games that my two Big East championships. The first one, 2013, it was the Syracuse-Louisville game, which was basically the end of the original Big East.
Yeah.
And I got to work with two very good friends, Johnny Cal and Mike Stevens. Then the last one last year.
One of whom is now your boss.
My boss correctly. In the Big East. I got to work the Armed Forces Classic in Ramstein Air Force Base with UConn, Michigan State, and it was only military people involved there. We threw the ball up at 12:40 a.m., so it would be on prime time back here in the States. But the environment was no less lacking. It was I think there was 3,000 seats, and they did a lottery all across the armed forces in Europe. Hmm. And they were able to bring in all the armed military from all branches that won that lottery to come. So it was a special evening for them. And the game was a good game as well. And 2 years ago, I worked a Sweet 16 game at the Garden. The Garden's always a special place to work. I hope it never gets old for me to go in there, because I still know high-level officials that I referee with that have never been in that building. But I worked the Florida-Wisconsin game where we went overtime in the Sweet 16, and it was just one of those games that you hope to get in an NCAA tournament. You basically stay out of their way, and they just played great basketball. And we were not a part of it other than, making the correct calls when we needed to. But those games, those assignments stick out in my mind probably more than any others.
Yeah, the Armed Forces thing, I covered the first Carrier Classic, Michigan State, Carolina, on the Carl Vinson. And I've covered in Summer Olympics and other Final Fours. That's still the single coolest sporting event I've covered, being up on the deck of that carrier. And
then after the carrier, I think they decided we better get off of these carriers
do these indoors. It was cool to be, and then there were a couple others they tried to do on inactive carriers where the floors got slippery. Wet. And that, but the first one they pulled it off, if it had rained, it would have been a disaster because they were going to try to play in the hangar deck. And we got to walk through, we went through the whole ship. So the Secret Service, because President Obama was going to be there, we had to bring all of our computers and cameras and all of our gear had to be on the boat at 6 a.m. So we had to leave downtown San Diego at 5 a.m., get there, it might even 5:30, set everything up, and then they kick you off while they sweep the whole ship. So the ship's in port, and it's between deployments, but if you're single and in the Navy and you don't have a family or whatever, you live on the carrier. You walk off and you're still in your bunk on the carrier while you're between deployments. And then all those people had to get off the ship. So you get off the ship, and there's 3 hours while the Secret Service goes through it. And then you get back on, and it's 9 a.m., and you can't leave. And they just gave us, at that point, they're like, you've been through security, you've had your background check, your gear's been swept. We had a barber who was from, I think, Hickory, give us a whole tour of the ship. At one point, I walked past a door that had, the radioactivity thing on it. So it's reactor space. I was like,
we are definitely places we're not, not supposed to be. But they didn't, you know, at that point, they were basically like, if you're on here, you know, we've determined you're not a threat. We weren't allowed to go above the flight deck, so like not into the, you know, the bridge and any of that stuff. We weren't allowed to go up there. But we were walking on the hangar decks, got to ride on the big elevators that move the planes up and down.
Ramstein was very similar.
So it's, those things are amazing.
They figure if you've been okay to be on base, you can basically go wherever you want to, walk around and look at the planes and everything. So it was a neat experience.
What's, and Connor, you mentioned Army. What are the coolest places you get to go regularly?
As far as stadiums are concerned?
Yeah, or cities, or, you know.
Blacksburg, Lane Stadium. I should have mentioned that earlier. I had Clemson at Virginia Tech on Saturday night this past year, and that was a very loud stadium. Blacksburg's a cool place. West Point. Both my mom and dad are from Pittsburgh, so anytime I get to go to Pittsburgh, that's exciting for me. And to work in Heinz Stadium, you know, Heinz Field is awesome.
Notre Dame.
Of course, yeah, Notre Dame. South Bend's not that special.
No, but Notre Dame.
The university is special. So, yeah, those are the good spots.
Tim, you mentioned the Garden, obviously.
Yeah, the Garden. Well, the Garden's.
And
the Garden.
you left this one out, but you were this year's Big East Championship game.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah, so Providence, Villanova. And that one went overtime, and it's a hard game to officiate, but we did very, you know, we got through it and did well. And.
And John, you went up for that one, right?
I did. Right. When Tim was given the last game, Dorothy and I said, you know what, we got to go up there. And
Connor came up for the previous one.
I was there for the real last big game. So Syracuse versus Louisville.
Yeah, so here's an interesting story. A good friend of yours, Paul Brazzo, Connor shows up for the final, Tim's final. And they reach out to Brazzo, and Brazzo gets Connor primo seats.
Yeah. Well, the tickets for Big East championships, especially when you had the Syracuse and the Louisvilles and the UConns and Georgetowns, at that time was they were not the Garden's not a huge arena.
Sure.
So the tickets were very hard to come by. So I already had a ticket for Laura, and she was, my wife was there, and Connor decided to come, and he was with his sister-in-law, and I thought I had already had two tickets, and so when we get in the locker room, I'm trying to send him up to the will call, and I look at my boss, Art Highland. He goes, Timmy, I don't have it. I thought I had given you the two tickets. I said, Art, I don't have the two. He says, well, hold on a second. Brazzo walks in the locker room. He says, what do you need? I said, Connor's here, and he's got his sister-in-law with him. He says, hold on. He reaches in his pocket. He said, these are my kids, but they're going to be ball boys for the game. So he hands me the tickets. I run them up the will call. I have no idea where they are. Well, when I come out for the pregame, Connor is sitting basically under the basket in folding chairs. He's got sweat hitting him during the course of the game.
Yeah.
So they were prime seats.
Prime seats for heckling the officials.
Well, yeah. Exactly.
Benefit.
And it was one of those great games. It went one way or the other, and it was a very, like all those Big East games, extremely competitive during the tournament time in the Garden.
All right, one, I want to circle back. Do you have something to say, John?
No, I thought you're, it doesn't matter the most exciting or important game that I had. They were all important. I Duke UNLV was clearly, Duke had gotten beat by 30-plus points the year before. UNLV was clearly the best team in the country and beating everybody handedly. And then, you know, Duke came to play, and UNLV, the game went right down to one last shot. And it was a special, special game because you had great, great teams. But I told you this before, Luke, I thought Grant Hill might have been the difference in from one year to the next. And, you know, you talked – Tim talked about the Garden, and Connor talked about West Point. There's two places that I think are the best places in the country for a basketball official to referee. They're different than any place else. It's Kansas and Polk Fieldhouse and Duke.
Yeah.
Those two are different places. And going to referee in Kansas –
is really a fun trip. That's a great place. And I can understand why they're successful and they they continue to get great players. That would be a great place to go for a good player to play.
One last thing here, and then we'll wrap this up. But I wanted to circle back to something you mentioned earlier, Tim, about your kids and searching social media. Do either of you guys look at social media about yourselves or other officials or the job?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have accounts on all of them. Not where it's so much my name where people could find me, but I catch up with old friends on Facebook and different things. But you'll look every once in a while, especially if there's been some controversy. You'll go on Twitter and put your name in and look at it. You can't help but do that sometimes. And most of the time, it's fun to read, and it's innocent enough. But I think Connor says that's one of his favorite things to do when he's watching the referee.
Not necessarily my games, but Tim's games.
It seems basketball is different in that aspect because of it seems that the fans know our names easier than they do football guys, I guess.
Yeah.
But you hear them yell our names from the stands. If you look it up, you got the zebra alert 15 minutes or 30 minutes before the opening tip, and here's the three referees for the night, and then there will be a list of fans' comments on each one of us. And they know where we were the last five nights. They'll list that. They'll say, oh, well, he was at Providence last night, and he was at Seton Hall, and he was at Miami the night before that. And it's important in college basketball that the fans know what every official's up to for some reason. I don't know, but
it was never that way back in
the day. No, I know.
No, I mean, there was websites that track everywhere we go.
Yeah.
So I don't know why that is with basketball, but I don't put much grain of salt in it. If I refereed the way the fans wanted you to referee, I wouldn't be employed much longer. So.
I do. Yeah, I check it, but like he said, fans don't know me.
Yeah.
Any call we make, they typically blame it on the referee, you know.
Sure.
And the referee's doing nothing other than
announcing the pass interference
administering the penalty, and they don't even, you know. So, but I do, I'll just get a little reaction. Typically, when I come home, my wife she'll also tell me what she thought. One story, I had a game. See that Virginia Tech? It was like one of the 3:30 starts. And I get home real. I mean, I crawl in bed at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I thought she was asleep, and she's laying there, and I get in bed. She goes, "Have you had a chance to look at that pass interference you called in the third quarter?" I was in the car for 4 hours on the way home. I had a couple phone calls. So, sometimes
everyone's a supervisor.
Immediate feedback when you get home. So.
Awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much for sitting down here. Your father and I have done this. This is our 16 times now, but this is a very different and entertaining and to me very interesting episode. Appreciate you guys sharing some of your stories from growing up and what you do now, and it really is kind of an amazing legacy to have a family that's got roots this deep, not just in the officiating, but doing it in and around the ACC, which is fascinating to me. So thank you very much. I can't promise more episodes during the summer, John. That's going to be up to you.
No, Luke, we probably take a sabbatical here for a little while and then get started again as we get through some of the football season. If you want some critique on Connor's games, we can do a podcast on that. But
do one down at the camp at NC State.
Yeah, we can,
find some
material to do. But
I like the idea of a podcast dedicated entirely to dissecting one of Connor's games.
Yeah,
we'll post all the film on the internet and people can follow along.
So we tell our audience to stay tuned.
Yeah. So. Anyway, thanks very much, guys. Appreciate it. And thanks, everyone, for listening. If we're not back soon, enjoy your summer, and it will be basketball season soon enough.
Thanks, Luke.